RV Family Travel Atlas is sponsored by Jayco. Since 1968, Jayco has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories. For more information, visit your local Jayco dealer or head on over to jayco.com.
And by the Thetford Corporation, the industry expert and innovation leader, Thetford has made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. To see a complete lineup of products, visit Thetford.com.
And by Cabela's. Cabela's has everything you need to get your family into the great outdoors. Visit Cabela's.com and make sure your next great camping trip is one for the record books.
And by Outdoorsy, the largest and most trusted rental marketplace. Outdoorsy is making it safe and easy to make money renting your RV with full insurance, roadside assistance, secure payments, and real people rating and reviews. Visit Outdoorsy.com to find a cool RV to rent or see how much money you can earn renting your own RV.
And by GoPower. For 22 years, GoPower has been a trusted leader in the mobile solar and power inverter market. Their solar and inverter systems and kits offer full-time or secondary power sources wherever grid power is inaccessible, unavailable, or unsustainable. To size a power system for yourself, visit gpelectric.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes, and also Sweet Maggie the camping dog.
You can read about our adventures at rvfta.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are going to school and learning all the basics of outfitting an RV with a solar power setup. We love the idea of using the sun's energy to power our RV when camping without hookups, but researching solar panels, inverters, and batteries can be a daunting endeavor.
Luckily, we found a great teacher to guide us through this lesson. Mark Spilsbury from GoPower broke it all down for us and helped us build the perfect system for our family. He's ready to do the same for you.
You might have given up on solar because it seems so complicated, but we found someone who's going to break it down in plain English. You are listening to episode number 186, RV Solar 101 with GoPower.
Before we head into this week's featured topic, RV Solar 101 with GoPower, it is time to induct another item into the RV FTA Gear Hall of Fame. And this is a really good one because they're all really good ones. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Outdoorsy.
Outdoorsy is the largest and most trusted RV rental marketplace, and they are making it easy to make some money renting out your RV. Now, we've actually had some people talking in our RV FTA Facebook group recently about renting out their RVs. And we know that some people like wonder if this is really something that would work for them. And we have to say, for us, it's great to see people that are making the RV work for them and actually using it,
put it to work,
to make
man.
Money.
Put your kids to work, put your RV to work.
Right. So some people have an RV, they love camping, but they just can't use the RV quite enough right now. Like, it's not like next year they won't be able to or the year after, but right now they can't use it as much as they might like to. And that's a perfect opportunity.
I also think of newbies that are wondering about the expense of buying a new RV. This might be the way to cover your monthly payment. Just renting it out one weekend a month could do that.
Absolutely. So thinking about renting through Outdoorsy could actually transform the economics of RVing for you. And even, hey, for those RV trips that you want to take, but maybe can't quite fit into the budget.
Well, our $1,000 pop-up camper Penny, she's going to pay for herself.
She's got to earn her money.
She's an old girl, but we're going to make her work.
All right. Visit outdoorsy.com/list-your-RV for more information.
All right. Today we are inducting the Cabela's Deluxe Camper's Kitchen, which we use on every single trip that we take the RV out. We've used it on a tent camping trip. And it is quick and easy to set up, and it is sturdy, reliable, and functional. Most importantly, functional.
Right. So this is actually a recommendation from Kate Dunbar. She had used this and she had raved about it to me. Even before she brought it up on the podcast, she had mentioned to me early on that she loved it when I just was picking her brain about great gear.
That was a great podcast, by the way, that Kate's Camp Kitchen podcast.
Mm-hmm. So we got it. And I'll be honest, even though Kate recommended it, I was a little skeptical because it seemed like a big thing that might be complicated. Like, I know Kate loves her stuff, but I thought, am I really going to go through the process of setting this up and breaking it down? Well, it's super easy.
Well, and honestly, like, we can't live without it now. Like, we don't have an outdoor kitchen in the toy hauler, so this really filled a gap for us. And I can't, like, I wouldn't want to go camping without this thing because we use it for so many different things that we put out there.
Right. I thought, oh, how is this any different than an outdoor T-bowl? But first of all, now that I know how to set it up after a couple of times, I can pretty much set it up and break it down in under 5 minutes, really. And the boys were helping me do it last summer, and I was actually thinking that this year they'll probably be able to just set it up by themselves. I can probably run it through them a couple times and they'll be able to do it. But it is so much better than an outdoor table. It really has such great counter space, but then it also has really thoughtful and well-designed storage. And there's the shelf underneath the counters. There's the hooks up above that you can use. There's some shelves that fold down. Now, there's also these hanging sort of cupboards. They're soft cupboards. And the nice thing is when we're taking a really short trip, like a weekend, I usually don't even set up those cupboards. It's like, I don't need the cupboards.
You don't need it at full power. I mean, like, someone like Kate Dunbar is a really fancy outdoor camp kitchen. We're a little bit simpler. But I love the fact that we put the ice machine on it. I love my Coleman stoves, and they can go right on it if I bring that. They're also... You could hang some dishes out there. You can keep some basic silverware out there. I mean, we really can put everything that we need to eat outside out there.
Yeah, I was leaving cups and seltzers all last summer out for the boys so that they could help themselves. So this is a great addition. If you don't have an outdoor kitchen on your RV, I think that this is as good. Get the camp kitchen.
Yeah, and this is retails for $139.99
at Cabela's. Right now.
It's often on sale. And I do I want to add this too. We don't own this, but they do have a smaller, simpler version of this as well if you want something that's a bit smaller for an outdoor kitchen
as
well.
Okay. All right. Yeah, you want to bring the price tag down.
It's in the same family of products. It's similar. It's about half the size.
All right, great. Now, we are so excited about this week's episode. This has been a long time coming for us. We've always been interested in solar just because we know that it's a big thing out there in the RV industry, right? It's kind of on that tipping point. It's, is this going to become a big thing or are most people not going to use it?
It's going to tip. I just don't know when.
Right.
You know, like, you know, at some point it's going to tip. And when you and I are like RVing without the kids one day, everybody's going to have solar.
Right. And it makes so much sense. But the problem was, is every time I kind of dip my toe in to research, I honestly got very overwhelmed. I'm even in a couple of Facebook groups that are for RV solar, and I'm telling you, I don't even understand the question. There's someone who's asking me a question to answer. I don't know the answer. I don't even understand the question.
Can I tell you something I've learned in this process about the difficulty of it? I think a lot of the difficulty of it and the difficulty of understanding the language and what people are talking about in these forums is because if you're a layman, the installation can be difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we have ours installed now.
Yeah.
When we interviewed Mark, it was not installed yet, okay? Now it is installed. We've been using it out in the driveway. It is completely intuitive and easy to use. You almost really don't do anything to use it.
The whole thing, once you have something, so what happened was I met Mark. I was actually lucky enough to meet him in person last year in Louisville at the RVIA show. And Mark, I followed up. I was talking to Mark on the phone for over an hour just about our personal questions on solar and what would be a good setup. By the end of that hour, I realized that you can understand solar. When someone who knows what they're talking about breaks it down for you, it's really not that complicated. The basics, the science behind it might be, but the basics aren't that complicated. And now that it's an RV, it is intuitive. It makes sense. I get it. And I just needed someone to walk me through that process. And honestly, to not try to sound smart, which is what a lot of people are trying
also,
to do
look,
out there.
There are people listening to this podcast that would love to install a solar system. And there are other people that that wouldn't, that mm-hmm. don't want to install a solar system, but would really like to have one. And our Whitehorse, our dealer, installed this for us.
Yeah.
You know, it was just a level of complexity that was a little bit beyond what I personally wanted to do. I wanted a professional installation.
Oh, no, because we had to put in the inverter and everything. We didn't have an inverter already. So that's a big deal. And you really need to have a level of expertise to do that, as Mark talks about, you know, later on in this show. But I think that really what it all boils down to is that you can understand this. Mark's here to help you understand this. And then, you know, ultimately what we're looking to see is more of these options at the manufacturer level that you can tick them off and actually get them with your RV instead of having to go through the
installation. People in the solar industry want this to be a box you can check off when you're ordering your RV, and then it would show up, or even at the dealership, mm-hmm. you'd be able to buy one that already has the solar pre-installed. And I have to say, I mean, we just picked up the RV a week ago and I've been using the solar out in the driveway. Like, I can plug in at my house, obviously, but I haven't plugged in because I've just wanted to see what it's capable of doing. And I am like, I'm excited like a little kid. And I really am, like, now that when I'm looking to book campgrounds, I'm like, let's go somewhere without hookups, you know,
yeah.
like let's go somewhere a little bit more off the grid. Let's go to a state park where there isn't a 30 amp or 50 amp and get that gorgeous sight that you can't get if you want hookups. And mm-hmm. It's just sort of opening up the future for me, for our family RVing. And
it's another stage. We're big into stages.
It's another stage. But also, you know, when the kids were little, we always wanted full hookups and we always wanted everything right there. And now that the boys are getting older, I think we are entering into a more adventurous stage in our RV journey. And I think the solar is going to be a really big part of that.
All right. So without further ado, here's Mark Spilsbury from Go Power.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are incredibly excited to be here with Mark Spilsbury, the business development manager at Go Power, and he's taken us to solar school today. He's a solar scholar.
He is so good at solar school. He took me to that place already in the past, and that's why I said he has to come on
the show. So all you listeners out there, he's going to take you to solar school today. And we want to break this down for everybody at a 101 level. This mm-hmm. is for beginners. We don't want to intimidate anybody. We want to make this accessible to you. So we're going to have a great interview with Mark, but before we dive in, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Thetford.
Thetford is the industry expert and innovation leader, and they have made RV travel a more pleasant experience for over 50 years. They've got tons of smart people like Paula the Mad Scientist, our new friend, behind the scenes, developing great cleaning and maintenance products that Thetford makes specifically for RVs. We talked about our latest favorite on the Spring Gear Guide, that Magic Foaming Awning Cleaner.
It's not actually called Magic Foaming Awning Cleaner, but it works pretty magically.
It's working. And there's lots of other things you need this time of the year to battle the bugs and the pollen that can get on the awnings and other parts of your RV. So head on over to Thetford.com and you can see their complete lineup of cleaners, black streak and bug removers, wax and wash options, slide out rubber seal conditioner, all those good things that I guess you need.
You want your RV to be really clean for when you get those solar panels installed. So welcome to the show, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, thanks for having me.
We are so glad you're on because I find solar discussions online super intimidating. And the more that we kind of researched solar, the more I kind of got like annoyed and felt like nobody really wanted to teach me. They just wanted to use really big words. And then when I got on the phone with you, you taught me, like you really walked me through it. So you're good at this.
You know the big words too, Mark, but you explain what they mean.
I try to do my best. I've been doing it for, I guess, 18 years now. So I kind of know what people see and read on the web and what the reality is, and trying to guide you in the right direction. So I'll do my best for you guys.
I think one of the issues here is it's very high interest to people, particularly people that are interested in camping a bit off grid. Then it's super high interest, but it can be intimidating. So why don't we break this down at the most basic level, get started. Tell us what the necessary components of an RV solar power setup are. What do we need?
Sure. Well, let's start off with the big bright globe in the sky. We need the sun. So that basically when you, it'll hit our solar panels. And a solar panel is just a battery charger whenever it's light out. So whenever we got sunshine, it's trying to charge your battery. So with the solar panel, that typically would get mounted to your RV's roof, and then you wire that down into a solar controller or regulator. There's a bunch of different flavors out there. I can get into that later. But that basically prevents the solar panel from overcharging your battery. So it's trying to, the solar panel is always trying to charge your batteries to 100% whenever it's light out. And the solar controller or regulator basically regulates the power coming out of that panel and does the proper 3 or 4 stage battery charging depending on your battery type.
Letting the sun's energy in when there's room to charge, but then it's kind of shutting that off when it's full at 100%.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like the brains of the system. So it basically, you program in your battery type, either it's, you know, flooded, lead acid, you know, gels or AGM batteries or whatever you got, and it knows how to take that power from the panel and properly charge your batteries. So I guess the best way to think of the system, think of it like your batteries are like your gas tank. So you got a couple batteries, you got like 200 gallons of fuel to work with while you're out there. And with the amount of solar you have on the roof, that's just, the more you have is just more gallons of fuel you can put back into your batteries whenever it's light out of your gas tank. And then the solar controller or regulator, tomato, tomato, however you want to call it, it's like the shutoff valve. So it knows that you're not going to overfill with that gas tank. And then you have the next step. So you've got your solar, your controller, and your battery. That's the 12-volt side. Typically, when people want to go solar, they also want to run a bunch of AC devices, like your creature comfort stuff. That's where you need an inverter that then converts that battery power into AC power. And we just size that based on the biggest thing the customer wants to run. Typically, if they say a microwave, I usually start at a 1,500 watt because you need about that much power to run a microwave. And then it's just bigger from there. It's just they want to run more things at the same time and not have to worry about like a breaker tripping or waiting till one thing's done to move on to the next. And that's basically it.
Now, in the typical solar setup, and whether it's a travel trailer or a motorhome, where is that inverter actually going to go? Is it behind the control panel? Where does that get situated?
Yeah, we're the fun products that we don't really get that much recognition on an RV, because everything we do is trying to hidden away, buried in the bowels of the RV. So usually they mount the inverter pretty close to the batteries. So sometimes if it's in a fifth wheel and we're adding more batteries to a system, it's mounted through that, like that pass-through compartment or somewhere where they can hide it. And then all you really end up seeing for solar and inverters is the solar controller on the wall and an inverter on-off remote. And typically they're pretty close to each other. And other than that, everything else is hidden away and it's all automated. When you want AC power and you're off dry camping or boondocking, you just turn the inverter on, run whatever you want to run, and when you're done, you turn it off.
Okay, so we're going to get super, super basic here, because I know that some people out there are going to roll their eyes at this. But you know what? I've been on Facebook long enough to see a lot of newbie RVers be confused that some things in their RV are working at certain times and others aren't, right? They're like, but I turn on this light and this is working. And I remember that being a learning curve for me. And this kind of boils down to this AC DC, which is a funny thing to say, thing, right? So could you just explain to people why it's the case that your battery has a certain kind of, you know, ability to work certain things in your RV, but you need this inverter in order to work other things?
Right. Okay. So every RV that comes off the lot has a converter, and that does the opposite of an inverter. It takes 120 like shore power or household power and converts that down into 12 volts so it can charge your battery, but also allow the power when you're plugged in to pass through and then run your devices. So that's why when they're plugged in, they have all this stuff working. But when you're unplugged, some things still work because those some things are really 12 volts. Most of your lights now are 12 volts. Your fans are 12 volts, you know, your pumps, that kind of stuff. You may have a 12 volt TV in there, but then your outlets won't work unless they have an inverter somewhere installed in the system. So that's where I go when I tell people, can you run your microwave when you're off, when you're not plugged in? Well, if you can't, you don't have an inverter. Likely you don't have an inverter. Sometimes some of the OEMs will put like a little tiny inverter, like a 300 or 700 watt inverter, just to run an outlet, maybe in the bedroom, that kind of thing. But most of the time, people want it to power the whole coach or the whole RV. That's where you need a bigger inverter to do that.
For the most part, it seems to me like there's a general rule that like motorhomes, motorized units do have inverters, and towables usually don't, but some might have one.
Right. So exactly.
Like a luxury fifth wheel might mm-hmm. have it, where the typical travel trailer, I'm guessing, probably does not.
And ours didn't, so we did have to add that.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, like a lot of they leave it up to the dealer and end customer, I guess, to see if that's what they want to do, if that's their kind of RVing style. A lot of people that want to just go and plug in, that's where that converter will do the job. But if you don't want to be the RVer that goes to the parks and plugs in and is tied to the cord, and you want to go exploring, you'll have a bit more of the freedom side of it, that's where you need an inverter system.
If you want to be one of the cool kids, that's what you're
that's
saying.
Right.
Because the cool kids aren't camping with all these hookups and all that fancy stuff. The cool kids are out in the middle of like some BLM land, drinking their coffee, cranking their AC.
Posting to Instagram
off their solar system.
Well, that's like for me, when I go RVing, like I don't want to hear a generator. Like for certain applications that we can get into later, you do need it. But for the majority of things, with a solar and inverter system, you can run everything in the RV. But I also want to be away from everybody. I want to be off by a lake and just have peace and quiet. And when I want my power, it's there. When I don't need it, I turn it off and I go exploring during the day, come back, all my stuff's ready to go for the night, and then just repeat the next day. I've been camping lots of times where, you know, the sites are a little bit more crowded, and you'd have people that aren't even in their RV that have their generator going all day long, and it's blasting in your face, which, you know, they're quiet, but it's still annoying. So what we'll line up all our cars to block the generator sound, and then we can have a bit of quiet. But if we can get people to look, like, you don't need a generator to do like 90% of the stuff in your RV. So it's just, you know, I get it. If you're in Texas and it's super humid in the middle of summer, you need your AC. I can get into it a little bit later, but I've got some things to make at least your generators smaller nowadays that you don't need a big honking one to do the same job.
All right.
I just want to stop for 1 second. I mean, it's because you're talking about it now. Does it really often come down to the AC? I mean, you can power an AC off a large enough solar system, correct?
Yeah.
But most of the solar systems people are going to be getting, they would still possibly need a generator for the granddaddy of them all, which is running the AC off grid.
Yeah. Like, that is the number one question we usually get. Like, if we could run fairly inexpensively, an AC for an RV, I'd own an island in the Caribbean somewhere.
You would. You're absolutely right on that.
People go, oh, like, well, can I just put a couple panels on it and run my AC? I'm like, yeah, everyone in the entire world would be doing that if we could. We can't. So they just don't realize how much power. So typically, anything that draws heat or cooling usually is running for a longer period of time, and it draws a lot of power. So like a typical, you know, 13.5 BTU, like, or ACF on the roof is, it pulls like 140 DC amps an hour. And like using, like, our most popular kit is called the Overlander. It has 170 watts, or I'll get to this later too, 9 amp panel. It produces 9 amps an hour. You would need a lot of solar to do it, to run it for a few hours, but then also a pretty big battery bank or gas tank to draw from, right? So not to say we don't get people that want to cover their RV roof with solar and have a ton of batteries, which we can do. It's just not typical. So a lot of people will put, you know, 2 to 3 panels on there, have a couple fans, one on intake, one on exhaust, and we can run everything else in the RV.
All right, Mark, you brought me very nicely to our next question. So you just happened to reference, you know, 140 DC amps per hour, blah, 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 you know, as you were giving that explanation. Now, look, I took all that basic science back in high school. I graduated. I did well in high school. But most of us don't use that kind of knowledge again over the next 20 years or so, and we kind of get rusty. So a big point of confusion when I try to navigate this world of solar energy is that all of the panels, and we'll talk about our panels a little bit later, but all the panels are laid out in watts, right? And you're told, like, this is a watt panel, that's a watt panel. And then when you're looking for information about what everything is running off of, you're getting all this amp nonsense, right? Or you're So, look, I know that it's complicated and sciencey, but is there an easy way to sort of help people transfer what they're being told is the, you know, the amp voltage, and, blah, 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 and the watts?
And I didn't do well in high school science, so if you could bring it down to like Sid the Science Kid level, that would be awesome.
I'll do my best. Okay, so solar panels, for whatever reason, it wasn't my decision. They decided to rate them all in watts. But I don't care about watts, and you don't really either, because your battery is rated in what?
Amps.
Amps, right?
Yes.
Right? And everything else, all your devices are rated in amps.
Yeah.
So we want to figure out what, like, the 100-watt solar panel, for example, it's roughly a 5.5-amp battery charger whenever it's light out. And people think, like, oh, I can convert... it's a 12 volt panel, so I can just take 100 and divide it by 12 and I get my amperage. It's not that simple. So 12 volt solar panels usually produce around 18 to 20 volts. So when you do that conversion, is how you get to that 5.5 amps. But that's also why you need to have that solar controller in there, because if you don't, that 18 to 20 volts, given a bit of time, will fry your battery if it wasn't in there. But we solar panels are a little bit overrated that way, because it gives them enough like force and pressure to try to fill your batteries up to 100%. And they also lose a little bit of efficiency when they get hot. So we want that, if it was, you know, 18 volts in the peak of the summer, it's going to lose a little bit of efficiency. So that voltage drops down to around 16 volts, but it still has enough like oomph behind it to really try to bring your batteries up to 100%. If it was at 14 or 12 volts, it would drop down. It would never be able to have enough power behind it to kind of really drive your batteries to that 100% full rate. So maybe I went off a little bit there, but so amps is really what we care about. So just got to look at the panel's ratings and look at what the amp draw is. And I kind of just try to say it like that. So like the 100-watt panel, I look at the math, it's a 5.5-amp battery charger whenever it's light out. And just like, you know how your car's fuel economy is rated, that's always in peak ideal conditions. I don't know if it's driving downhill to get that rating, but typically we take about 80% of that rated number to give you what you should really see as an average, because most of the time on an RV, you never park perfectly facing the sun, and there's always things, it's mounted flat. So usually we base all of our calculations on around about 80% of the power of the rated panel. Some scenarios, like if you're in Colorado in you know, the winter where it's really sunny, that's actually where you can get the panels to perform better than their rating a lot of the times, because it's in the optimal condition. So
think quartzite.
Quartzite. So quartzite, it's if you're going down to quartzite, this is another thing, another question maybe, but like a lot of times people go down there and they're parking it, and it's over the winter months, they're leaving it there for a while. That's one of the only places I actually recommend people, if they want to tilt their panels up. If they're going to leave their RV parked for like a month, maybe longer, then it's worth tilting it up, because you can, in the wintertime, the sun's a little lower in the horizon, so you don't get as many sun hours on the roof with them flat. So you can actually get about 30 to 40% more power if they're tilted. But the problem with the tilting is you really got to remember to tilt them back down before you drive away. But if you're like a weekend guy and you're going for a week, typically I just say, why don't you just add another panel on the roof and not worry about it? And that's what the majority of people do, is just add a little bit more solar to the roof, and then they never have to go up there because they know that they've got tons of power and they don't need to worry about it.
So in figuring out how much solar they need, then what the conversion between that amps and the watts, what they need to do is figure out what a typical amp draw would be for them in ideal usage, and then figure out how many watt panels they need in order to basically support that at like 5.5 amps, right? Per 100 watt panel.
Yeah. So we get a lot of people that'll come in. Okay. I got a 27 foot RV. What solar size panel do I need? I'm like, well, there is a few depends factors, because it could be, is it, you know, just for yourself, or are you guys a couple? Or are you like a family like me that has 5 kids that all want to use stuff? And do you like to go in the winter? Do you like to go in the summer? So there's a little bit of sizing that goes on involved. So we do have, even if just to do it as a, for yourself to kind of like get used to the idea of adding things up, we have an online calculator that people can go to that can help add up. You go through all the things like, okay, these are all my DC loads. These are the AC loads I want to run. And it kind of will, it'll suggest to you what, this is the size system that you need. This is the size battery bank we recommend. This is the size inverter that we suggest.
So, Mark, let's do this. Let's take a quick break. And why don't we come back and we'll break that down very specifically, like what you can run off one panel, what you can run off two panels, et cetera, et cetera. We'll get really precise for our listeners out there so they know what to buy.
Sure.
Sounds good. All right. We'll be right back. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are here again with Mark Spilsbury of Go Power, and he is taking us to solar school. I have learned so much already, and we're going to dive back in. We're going to get specific about what kind of system you might want and what your needs are for a solar-powered system. But first, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco.
You can go big, but still stay pretty light with Jayco's Whitehawk, one of the leading ultralight travel trailers. The 2018 Whitehawk features impeccable attention to details, industry-leading construction, convenient design, and Jayco's 2-year limited warranty that makes getting down to the fun fast and easy. Visit your local Jayco dealer at jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
Welcome back to the show, Mark. Are you ready to dive into lesson number 2?
Ready to go.
All right. He's so eager to dive into lesson number 2 that he started to dive into lesson number 2, in the first season.
Sorry.
But no, that's okay, because we want to help people size their own personal solar system, because honestly, there are so many options out there. It can be scary, and you can do what we did for a couple years and just shut down and say, we don't know what we want, and move on.
And some people might want something more basic, and some people might want to go all the way. So let's break that down for them. Mark, get us started here. What can we do? A simple system, a medium system, a more complicated system?
What questions do people need to ask, and what calculations do they need to make to figure out what works for them?
Okay, so how do I break this down? So just as a simple system, if they just want to just be using their 12-volt stuff only, let's just look at solar just by itself. So like the average couple burns nowadays about 50 to 60 DC amp hours a day. And our Overlander kit, which is our most popular one, that's got that 170-watt panel, which is really 8.9, let's call it 9 amps solar panel in there. That's enough during the summer. If you take 6 hours of usable sunlight throughout the spectrum of the day, that'll put back in enough power to keep those batteries topped up for when they use the power. So they should be able to go through a weekend and only have to have one panel, and that's it. So if they're a couple that just wants to do 12 volt, 2 batteries and 1 panel, and they're ready to roll. It's when they want to go a little bigger. Do they want to run their AC stuff? They want the creature comforts. They want all the entertainment stuff. They want the kitchen stuff to work. That's where we look at. The first thing I do is when they want to look at AC, like I said before, is we look at if they have a standard microwave or a convection microwave. Standard microwave is going to be probably the biggest thing they're going to run. And that's where I look. If that's it, then if we're starting small, I usually say a 1,500-watt inverter. Because when we do these systems, like solar, you can grow as your power needs grow. But when you install an inverter, you go to all the trouble to install it. You can't really add on to it once it's done. So we really want to figure that size out from the get-go. So if they have, like I was saying, a regular microwave, 1,500 watt, work all day long. And I like starting there because if you have a 15-amp outlet at home, anything you plug into that 1,500 watt inverter is like plugging into a 15-amp outlet. So you can run whatever you want that way. When you have a convection microwave on some of the bigger units, usually you want to go to a 2,000 watt inverter. And really between 2 and 3,000 after that, it's really just, do they not want to worry about running multiple things at the same time without a breaker going or something, tripping. So if you're the couple that has a couple kids that wants to run your AC stuff, usually we look at like two panels and then four batteries, and then either a 1,500 or 2,000 watt inverter. And if you're a full-time RVer, you want to maybe look at three panels that you want to put on there and the same inverter size and maybe four to six batteries to have a little bit more storage for when you go out and the weather's kind of crummy, you're not getting as much power out of the solar panels as you normally do on a sunny day, but then you have a little bit more reserve in your batteries to get you through kind of scenario. And to take another step, those kind of setups are all good with the three-way propane fridge, but sort of a trend we've seen through the RV OEMs is that a lot of the RVs coming out now have, you know, pretty close to four full-size all-electric refrigerators that don't have the option to run on propane, which I wish they did because it's a great way to save power. But we usually need to make the system even bigger now to offset that big fridge draw. So we have a four-panel system sort of for like the apartment size or fridge. And then if you have a full-size, you know, some of those fridges are bigger than the fridge you have at home.
Right. We have listeners actually that have this issue right now. They've posted about it in our private Facebook group because they have a Winnebago motorhome that has a residential refrigerator and they're going dry camping this year and they want to kind of get a solar setup that will just like they would have been fine dry camping with just their generator on the motorhome and everything. But because of the draw on the battery with their residential and they have a CPAP machine at night, they're worried that their generator, that their battery won't make it through the night with both the refrigerator and the CPAP. So it really is a concern for a lot of people who have those refrigerators now.
Yeah, so we came out with two kits this year. We call them there's an all-electric four and there's an all-electric six. And that they come with either, it's four of our 170-watt panels, which is, either off math in my head, what is that, 30 rough amps, or you have the six panel that's over 50 amps. I know with the six panel system on like these big 40-footers that are doing dry camping, that'll run everything they'll pull off of it. And it's getting close to do the AC for a bit, but not for too long. So that's usually where you have. But that would mean the other part of it is you can go that big on solar, but you really also got to go big on the batteries too to make it worthwhile. So kind of the rule of thumb that we've kind of gone with is, you know, for either 100 or or 107 watt panel, you really want to have two batteries or two 12 volts or two 6 volts to really make it worthwhile per panel. It would be the ideal thing. The problem is not everybody has the room to do so. So if you can make it as big as you can, you're going to be better off because come nighttime, you still pull the same amount of power out of your batteries, you know, typically, but it's just the amount of solar you have, it will charge it up faster the next day.
Now, Mark, I think this is a good time to talk about weight, because as we talk about moving up to a more powerful system and having more batteries, the batteries are heavy. And that is something that I absolutely want our listeners to consider as they consider adding solar. If you're in a gigantic fifth wheel or a Class A motorhome, you're probably going to be able to handle that weight easily. But if you're in a small travel trailer, you need to be conscious of how much weight you're adding with the batteries. So can you give us a little bit of an idea of what the batteries weigh? Because that really may be pivotal in terms of people making their decisions about how
many
batteries
get.
Yeah, exactly. So like with batteries, the heavier they are in their class, so like, you know, there's group 24s, 27s, 31s in, say, a 12-volt battery. We like we have a group 27 battery. We use AGM batteries. And typically on a towable unit, you've got a spot for one or two batteries on the tongue because you don't really want to add a ton of weight to that. And they're outside, so those guys usually, OEMs on a towable or dealership, usually put in flooded lead acid batteries. They work great. They're inexpensive, but they take a bit of maintenance, and you have to have them outside because these batteries, when they charge, they gas, they vent. So with wanting to make your solar system bigger, we like to use the AGMs because that stands for absorbed glass mat. Essentially a gel battery, so the acid's in a gel form, and it doesn't off gas, and it can be charged rapidly with a charger or the solar system. So when you want to make your solar system bigger, you can bring those batteries inside, but yes, you need to find creative places to put them. I see a lot of people put them under a bed or under the couch, or they try to put, you know, two or four batteries on one side and then the same amount on the opposite side to spread the weight around. But they just have to look at that equation and figure out places they can put their batteries.
That's a very important information for our listeners that, you know, if you're getting a larger set and you possibly might have four batteries, you might not want all four of those batteries on one side of your RV because they're heavy enough that could actually affect your tires. So this is a process that you want to be very thoughtful about and really do your research about.
And I think really important point that Mark, you know, brought to the table in this segment, I want to emphasize it one more time before we move on, is that if you think you might be upgrading your solar system, like let's start with two panels, maybe we'll move to four, you need to get the inverter that will handle that growth. I mean, that was something that you said that I think, you know, makes sense, but you could skip over that in your reasoning process.
Yeah. Like with batteries, you can grow and you can change them over time. You don't want to mix battery types together or different sizes. That can cause issues. We want to keep them all the same. And then, you know, the solar you can grow, but the inverter part, you really can't. Get into that. So typically with an inverter system, the way we like to have it wired is that I don't know if you guys know the term, a transfer switch, but you can't have two sources of AC power happening at the same time. So when you're plugged in to shore power or you have a generator plugged into shore power and running, you can't have your inverter system running at the same time because the shore power will always win and it'll let the genie out of them, the smoke out of that inverter. You don't want that. So with a transfer switch, it only allows one source of AC power happening at one time. So that gets installed in line on where the shore power cord goes from the outside of your RV into your breaker panel. So that if you have your inverter on and then you go to plug in or you flick your generator on, it automatically cuts the power off to the inverter and lets the AC power flow in, and then also allows power to your converter to charge your battery, which is what you want to do with that generator or shore power. And then when you unplug, if your inverter's still on, it flicks it back open again, and then the inverter runs and you don't skip a beat. But sometimes they have it set up so that they have to manually unplug and move things around. They're making the person the actual transfer switch, but we like it so it's all automatic. And these are another thing that gets buried away that you don't really see, that helps make everything work seamlessly.
Yeah, because that could lead to user error, right?
Or just it keeps people from wanting to buy it, you know? Like, I mean, I guess part of your journey in solar over the last 18 years is just making this stuff easier for people.
Yeah, like, I mean, we want it all, like, simple. All there is on the wall is you got your solar controller so you can see what's going on and your inverter on-off remote. And then other than that, you don't need to worry about anything else. It's our goal. And then you're off exploring or hiking or doing whatever you do during the day, and then, you know, you come back at night when the sun's going down, your batteries are topped up, and you're ready to use whatever power you want to use. And then it just repeats.
All right. Well, let's talk about our system that we have installed.
We're going to be self-centered for
on Buck the Octane. Well, also, I just think it's interesting for people to hear what we've had installed and what we're going to be able to do with our system. And we're going to share that journey with our listeners as we go.
Right. And let's tell people that Mark is actually the person who put together our system for us. So I talked with Mark for an extensive period of time, and he asked me all those questions that we just talked about, right? About usage and everything and what we wanted to run, our convection microwave and everything. And then we talked about how you would put that together, and you decided on what our sort of needs would be. So do you want to tell everybody what you decided?
Yes, sure. So no pressure on me, right?
No, no. I mean, and this is now the time that we'll also tell you, we put a picture of you up in the RV. It's there over the mantle.
Mark's solar system.
My cell phone. No, so because you guys have told me that you do a little bit more winter RVing than you do in the summer, or maybe you just do more year-round, I went with three of our 100-watt solar panels. If you were just doing the same thing as you guys wanted to do just in the summer, you probably would have been fine with just two. But because we do the winter stuff, I wanted to add another one just to give you a little bit more power. So that's a little over 15 amps when your batteries need it is what you're going to get per hour back into your batteries. So in all of our kits, like the kits we make, this is we call it a retreat kit, the 100-watt, and it'll have the first one you get has our 30-amp PWM controller, which stands for pulse width modulation, which we can get into if you'd like as well. But that's just basically the smart battery charger. And because solar is a passive technology, you don't really see it working. Using a digital controller, which would be like, gives you a little window into the system. And with that, the controller, actually, something I should point out, is a limiting factor, because the controller, they're rated in amps as well. So that's a 30-amp controller. So it can only handle 30 amps of solar, which is roughly 500 watts. So you could add more if you guys ever wanted to. Could go through that controller before you would have to get a bigger controller. But 90% of people don't go past that. So we like to include that size. It gives people to upgrade a little bit, and they don't have to worry about swapping out controllers and things. It's also a flush mount controller. There's lots of controllers out there that are more industrial, we see, where the wires kind of got to mount to the front of the controller. It's just not, you don't want to give it an elbow, you know, and knock a wire out, that kind of thing. So with the solar controller that you have, it shows you three key things. Two you may not care about, one I really like. So it shows you how many amps the panels are producing at any given time, if you care. It shows you your battery voltage at any given time, if you care. Typically, the best one that I like, it just shows a percentage of power remaining in your battery. So you can look at it and go, okay, I got 82%. I'm good to go. And that's typically what I like leaving it on, and then not worrying about the rest. Because if it's working, you know your battery's your fault. And then from there, your unit got wired with our cable entry plate, which makes it for a real clean install on the roof. And then, so that's your solar side of it. So we've got the three panels and the controller running all down to your batteries. We went with our AGM batteries, so you guys could bring them inside to make the battery bank bigger. And we went with six of our 6-volts, and each 6-volt battery is 224 amps. So with 6 volts, you don't get to times that by 6 because it's in 6 volts. When you wire them together, you've really got now three 12-volt batteries that are giving you a little over 670 amps. So that's like, that's your gas tank. You guys have a 670-gallon gas tank to play with. And then from there, we added our inverter charger, which I think you guys are really going to like. It's a 2,000-watt pure sine inverter. It's got a 100-amp-hour battery charger. And then so it has a built-in transfer switch, like I was talking about before. So, and then you also have a remote that'll go on the wall, probably next to the solar controller, for the inverter. And it's also digital.
Now, and does the remote have some sort of find button or something for when my kids leave it lying around like they do with every other remote that's known to man?
A big red button that says do not touch, right?
No. I know right where that remote's going. We have a little cabinet where they can't reach.
Yeah, just that other height range. No, it's pretty simple. All they can really probably do with playing with the buttons is turn things on and off, which can drive you crazy, but tell them not to do that. But what it does, it'll show you when it's inverting, when it's charging, how many amps and what rate it's charging. If you guys want to look into that, it's pretty slick. It'll show you when you have AGM batteries, which don't need to be equalized, but if you had flooded batteries, it would show you when that's happening and different things. Some of the cool features about this inverter, it has, like, remember I was saying how maybe when you want to run your air conditioner, but now you can get away with a smaller generator. So it has a feature called Power Share that normally when you plug a generator into your shore power, you need at least a 3,000-watt generator to fire your air conditioner's compressor over because of the surge and how much power it draws. That's usually just at startup, and then it ramps back down. But now you can get away with a little portable generator, plug that in, like a 2,000-watt. When you plug that portable generator in, and it goes to fire the air conditioner's compressor over, the inverter senses that it doesn't have enough juice to really turn that over and will share the power up to 2,000 watts of power to assist to run that load, and then it turns itself back off again. So it actually syncs up the waves, and there's, for a period, there's two sources of AC power working together to run that load, and then it turns itself off. So a lot of guys like that. If they don't have a built-in generator, but they have wanted to use a little portable one, because a 3,000-watt portable generator isn't that easy to move around for a lot of people.
And it's louder, right?
2,000 watt. Well, it's louder, it's heavier, it takes up more space. It's all of that. Where now you get away with a little portable, they're much quieter, which I appreciate, plugging that thing in. But so that's where I'm saying, if you do need an AC for those times when you're in, you know, Death Valley or in the middle of the south in the summer and you need that AC, at least you can get away with having a smaller generator, and then you can have inverters and solar to do the rest.
All right, now let me ask you a dumb question, because I want everyone to be clear on this. Now, say we're doing a sort of a mixed trip where we're going to a couple different locations, and we are at a private campground first, and we are on, you know, 50 amp or 30 amp, depending on, you know, we're 50 amp. Now, we would be charging up the system all the way, correct? And then we could, say, then go off into Quartzsite or BLM land and have a full charge, even though we didn't have the best sunlight necessarily at the previous stop.
Yeah, as you're driving, those solar panels are always working on your on the roof, charging those batteries up. So wherever you, as long as it's in the sun, it's trying to bring your batteries up to 100% every day.
Right. So I love that idea. I didn't realize that my solar panels would be working even if I wasn't doing anything to make them work. Like, they will just be on all the time, taking in the sunlight.
Yeah, so that's why, like, having a big battery bank or a gas tank, you're getting free fuel from the sun all day long, whenever you want. So you'd want to be able to, if you went to a gas tank or a gas station and they were handing out free fuel, there'd be the hugest lineup to get it, right? So the more solar you can have on there to fill your batteries back up, the faster the rate of charge it's gonna be.
All right. Well, now everybody that's listening is gonna get lots of looks at our system. We will, after this episode comes out, you guys on Facebook, on Instagram, we'll be doing lots of stories and everything, a little video to show you exactly what this
Stephanie
looks like.
Cooking in the convection oven
with the solar,
running it off solar.
All right, but so you'll get more information about that, and of course we'll talk about kind of how it works for us in real time as the months go on, and we're excited to test that out. But now we want to, you know, focus on one more thing in this episode, and that's just kind of all of the frequently asked questions that we see people, you know, who are struggling to kind of figure this whole solar thing out on Facebook and everything. We see a lot of these. So we are going to be back in a minute, and we're going to talk about those solar FAQs. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are here for segment three with Mark Spilsbury from Go Power. He has taken us to solar school. I have personally learned so much. I think Stephanie has really learned so much. And I am more excited than ever to try out our new solar system. But before we dive back in to talk about some of the nitty-gritty things like maintenance and installation, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Cabela's.
Cabela's has everything your family needs to get into the great outdoors and camp in comfort. And we are going to be checking out all of the new camping gear at Camping Days, which is coming up at our local Cabela's store in Hamburg, Pennsylvania on April 21st and 22nd. We really have such a great time at these events, and so many of our listeners that have come have a great time too. It's a lot of fun.
And we're going to be there April 21st.
Yes, we are, the 21st only, not the 22nd, but they'll still be having Camping Days on the 22nd.
They're still going to have stuff you can buy.
There's going to be specials on gear. There's fun activities for the kids. There's like local clubs that come, like the cooking clubs and the outdoors clubs. And there's also a lot of educational opportunities. They do like workshops for different...
And the star of the day is going to be that Penny, the pop-up camper, is going to be at Cabela's, and we're going to set her up in front of the store, and we're going to set her all up with all of our Cabela's gear that we love
something.
The most. I'm going to ask, you know, it's so funny. I got to ask permission first. Like, I need to clear that.
Yeah.
It's Cabela's headquarters.
Yeah, you should make grilled cheeses
no,
for everyone.
No, I totally, if they allow me, I will have my grill out there and I will be cooking.
All right. Of course, even if you can't make it to one of your local Cabela's stores, you can always see their full line of affordable gear at Cabela's.com. Cabela's, it's in your nature. All right, Mark, you ready to talk about all of the random things that people want to know?
Absolutely.
All right.
Let's get nitty gritty and talk about install here. I'm very curious right off the bat. Like, Ruff, do you know like what percentage of people install these themselves, and what percentage have them done at a dealer? Do you guys have that information?
No, but if I had to take a guess, I want to say it's still about 70-30, 60-40 that go to a dealership to do it versus themselves. For the solar part of it, especially if the units are coming pre-wired, it does make it a lot easier, because the hardest part about wiring solar is not mounting the panels to the roof. You can take a bit of time and figure that part out. It's usually running the wires down through the roof, up through the wall to find where you want to mount your solar controller, and then from there down to the batteries. If that's already done at the factory, that makes it a lot easier for an end user to install it themselves.
And you are seeing that more and more, though, that they are doing that kind of prep, right?
Yeah, in the last few years, and then this coming 2018 especially, it's really taken off. There's a lot, almost all the OEMs that I can think of all have some type of prep for solar. It's either, you know, we call our solar on the side for the, you know, portable solar kits, or we have a wired for solar program for the rooftop solar hard mounted panels. It's one or the other or both, but they're all doing something similar, and they're really getting on the bandwagon of it.
Love it. Very, very. The RV industry is finally becoming a little bit progressive with some of these things. It's great to see.
Well, yeah, you know, as you know, the emergence of LEDs came in, it made the solar a lot more viable option too, because before LEDs, you know, your RV wasn't that efficient on lighting, and that'd be one of the things you're running all the time. So that really helps. And then just things as the I guess it's more the millennials too are getting into buying an RV these days. They're really interested in
it's
solar.
It's always driven by consumer demand, isn't it? I mean, if people want it, they're going to start doing it. So it seems like it's just a sign that people want it. Now, if somebody is going to get into this world and have a solar system installed, roughly how many hours would that take? And obviously this is going to vary a little bit depending on where you get it installed, and what you pay per hour is going to be all about, you know, the dealer that you work with. But generally speaking,
people want to have a little bit of an idea.
Generally speaking,
budget.
What is like a budget for installing?
So for a single panel with a controller and all the wiring, and it's depending on the RV, right? But usually it's between like 1 to 3 hours. The wiring part is a big deal, because they can get hung up and not be able to run the wire down and snaking around. That's the hardest part. So that's why I think the dealers are really helping us to help with the OEMs, and the OEMs are seeing it now to have it prepped on their wall. Because if it's already done, we put a decal on the inside of the RV with our – it's basically the exact same size decal of our solar controller. It's got a little dotted line where you make your cut. In behind that spot, you'd find a loop of wire. You can put your controller in there, and they've already run the wire all the way to the battery compartment. You just go to hook it up, and so that can speed it up a lot.
So that pre-wiring actually is a big deal to look for if you think you might be interested, because that could save you a lot of dough.
Oh my God! It's
later.
Like back in the day when car companies weren't putting in auxiliary jacks. You know, it probably cost them like 25 cents to put in an auxiliary jack.
Right.
But then if you wanted to do it aftermarket, you're talking about putting in a whole new stereo or doing, you know, major operation on your unit. And who wants to do that? I mean, the manufacturers. I'm so glad to hear they are getting on board.
Yeah, well, when the walls are bare, it's so much easier to run it, and they're doing a proper way to run it to get it. Because sometimes you have to go, you know, in the aftermarket, the old way was to run it through your fridge vent because it was already plumbed, and then go, you know, down through there and come up somewhere near your fridge, and then from there to the batteries. They can even make the wiring run a lot shorter if they have the wiring done at the factory from roof down to a nice spot for the controller and then to the battery compartment. If someone was going to a dealership, it's going to range probably 2 to 3 hours for the first panel or first kit. When you go to add expansion kits, it's usually like an hour of time probably to put that on. And then for end users, usually when they do it themselves, I'd estimate it's going to take 2 to 3 times as long, because you're a little bit nervous about doing it. You want to make sure you get it in the right spot, but it's just something to factor. So they know where they're doing it. But the harder part is usually wiring in an inverter system. That's tying into a transfer switch, tying in your converter if it's a standalone inverter versus an all-in-one unit, tying that into your breaker panel. If you're not electrically inclined, that's usually where we recommend people go to have a proper installation done through their local dealer. They'll have done, you know, hundreds of these or kind of installs, and they know exactly how to do it and do it properly. It's kind of the way I usually recommend it, but there are people that do it themselves. It's just, you got to have that a little bit of knowledge of electrical wiring.
I mean, let's just say you need to know what you're doing. This is their safety issue.
Everybody thinks they can do everything nowadays because of YouTube, and YouTube is a lovely thing, but it's okay to say there's some things that are really going to require at least an operating knowledge of what you're doing.
Yeah. Because solar is nice where it's a totally standalone system. It doesn't tie into anything else other than your battery. You got your panel on the roof, goes down to that solar controller, and from there, straight shot to the battery is the ideal way. That way, it's totally, you can even have, you know, some of our RVs have, you have a DC disconnect where it kills the power to the entire RV, except then you have the solar always maintaining your battery. So it's a totally nice standalone system, but where you have an inverter system, it's tied into a bunch of different things. You really got to have a bit of knowledge of installation and patience if you're going to do it yourself, because they're not always the, everything's hidden in an RV. It's kind of, you know, in the bowels. You got to know what you're looking for and all that. So,
and each one's different. Each RV is different.
Each one's different. But if you were to on an inverter install with all those pieces, you're probably looking at like 8 to 10 hours of time to do an install. That's also why you really want to make sure you know what size inverter you want to go with. Because with an inverter, depending on the size of the inverter, the wire gauge changes the bigger it is, the larger the cable you need. So if you're going to go with, say you only went with 1,000 watt, you thought that would run everything. And then you're like, oh, I really wish I could have the microwave going now, or I've got some, who knows, in 2 or 3 years, there could be some new device that we all want, but it takes more power. We don't know what it is. You really want to kind of get that size right out of the gate. So that's why I like having at least a 1500 watt inverter, just because it gives you like that 15 amp outlet at home that, you know, if you plug it into that, it's going to work.
Now, Mark, is the future here, or the future that you want to see, is that when you're ordering an RV, that this would just be a box you check off as an option, right? I mean, then you just pay one price and it would be done, you know, at the manufacturer.
I think some of them do that. Some of them definitely have an inverter as either an option. A lot of the bigger ones, like we're talking about, make it a standard because they know that you want to have all the available power options there. Some of the starter units don't, but a lot of times the starter units are like the towables or the people that really want solar and that really want an inverter system, because that's what you're like, maybe like ourselves, we've got young families, we want to get away from everybody. And we want to go off and dry camp and have our power when we need it. So those are the ones that kind of need it. But that's where, you know, your local dealer can come in and install it. Or you can get it through the factory that way, too.
All right, Mark, now I've got a husband, three kids, and a dog to take care of.
Yeah.
I really don't need more things to take care of in my life. So tell me what kind of maintenance, you know, I'm looking at with these solar panels.
Okay. So with the solar panels, if it's the rigid style panel that we do, like our 100 watts we're talking about, I'll usually go up every month or so, take a peek on the roof to make sure you don't have like leaves or, you know, you've been visited by some birds or whatever, but you want to make sure it's cleaned off. And you can take like a hose or a pressure washer or a wet cloth and scrub it all off. They're pretty durable. Like the solar panels are going to, not that I want to say it, but they'll outlast the RVs they're on, because a lot of people will take them off their RV and move them to the next RV. They're warranted for 25 years. There's panels out there that are getting close to, I think, 60 years old that still work fine. So it's really just keeping them clean. And through that solar controller being digital, you can see, like, well, maybe if you wanted to put it on the amp hour rating, if you see a drop in amp charge rate back into your battery, there's likely something up on there. So every couple of months, I just peek my head up there. If it's clean, then you're good to go. But if you've had a big, you know, up my way, I get pollen blooms from, you know, broom bush or whatever that covers the panels. You just want to clean them off.
In a sense, that's not extra maintenance, because you need to be climbing up on your roof sporadically anyway, even if you don't have solar up there.
Yeah.
Just making sure everything's good to go.
Yeah, I've had, like, in our new building here, I've had a few people pull in that don't have a ladder on the roof, and they're wondering why their system's not working so well. And I'm like, well, come into my office and look down at your RV. It's like, you know, it's covered with leaves on the roof. You got to make sure it's totally cleaned off for it to work properly. I guess that's something to be also to know, too, with you'll get questions about shading. So, like, when we're mounting solar panels, we try to keep them as far away as we can from like an air conditioner or something that'll cause it to shade. But when you're going to get some kind of shading on your roof eventually. Like, I try to tell people to mount solar panels on your awning side if you can, because in theory your other side is going to be backed up against maybe trees or something that could cause shading on that side. So you want to have it on the most sunny exposure side that you can do. But yeah, maintenance with panels, it's pretty simple. You just got to make sure they're clean. The cleaner they are, the better they're going to work. And then it's just every so often have a look up there and clean them off. And then for batteries in your system, which is nice for you guys, you don't have any maintenance to do with the AGMs because they're a totally sealed battery. There's nothing to do. But a less expensive version is the flooded batteries. They still perform the same way, but with flooded batteries, they have you have to add distilled water every so often with a special, it's kind of like a turkey baster to put the water back in. But most people don't do that themselves or don't know how to do that. They usually have the dealer do it. Or if they don't do it, they
it's actually quite easy. Sulfate. You know, that's actually quite easy basic maintenance, though.
But it's one of those things. It's like without a solar system, here's an example. You go out RVing for a week and you come back late on the Sunday night, you park in your RV in the driveway. What's probably the last thing, sorry, Jeremy, to remember to do when you get home is plug your RV in. If you leave your batteries in a low state of charge, they're going to sit there for the week until you remember, oh, shoot, I forgot to plug my RV in. They're going to sit there and sulfate and cause issues with their batteries. So where if you had a solar system on it, you're driving home, parking in the driveway, it's trying to charge your batteries up to 100% and make sure they're ready to go for your next trip. So just another thing with batteries. But
all right, Mark, that was an incredible education in Solar 101. Now, you got to tell our listeners where they can go to find out more information about Go Power and to size a power system for their own RVs.
Sure, absolutely. So our website, GP, like Go Power, gpelectric.com, is a great resource for information. We've got a good video channel on there. It shows solar installations, inverter installations, all that kind of stuff. And I'd suggest, because when you're sizing system, we've got our online calculator that'll really help you go through and help you figure out all the things that you're you have on your RV that are running. A lot of people forget about stuff that's running 24/7 that they may not know about, like a fridge propane alarm or, you know, that, or fridge circuit board, that kind of thing. So go onto our calculator and try it, and it'll tell you what size system is recommended for you. Because with RVers, there's no one size fits all. It's a depends factor. And like we were saying, I got five kids at all. Maybe all three of the girls want to use a hairdryer. Everyone's power needs are going to be different. And then from there, we have a great dealer locator that basically has all of our dealers across North America on there. You can find the closest dealer to you where you'd like to get a kit.
Oh, thanks, Mark.
Mark Spilsbury, thank you so much. That was really quite an education. My goodness, I think that's just about everything you need to know.
This has been a lot of fun, and we can't wait to really get familiar with our own system and start using it and taking it out for its pieces.
It's going to be an ongoing story for us, and thank you for chapter one. We really appreciate your time today.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Anytime. Great to talk to you guys.
Bye.
Welcome back to the show, everybody, and a really big thank you to Mark Spilsbury from GoPower. I mean, I really think that he explained that in a way that was very accessible to all of you out there. And if you have further questions, drop into our Facebook group and ask us, and if we can answer, we will, and if we won't, we'll go and ask Mark Spilsbury.
We absolutely will, and I bet we'll get some answers for you, so I highly encourage you to do that.
Yeah, I would really encourage you to look into...
Let's learn together.
Let's learn together. We'll go on the journey together. That's what we do here at RVFTA. Now, we have a huge announcement. We have been being asked for years to sell merchandise, to sell t-shirts, to sell hats, to sell RVFTA flags. And let's just be honest, Stephanie, we've just never pulled it together. It's difficult to do merch.
Yeah.
It's not a strong skill set for us.
Ew.
We've done it a few times. We ended up with boxes of stuff in the basement, and we don't like going to the post office and doing the shipping.
Fulfillment.
And then a couple times we didn't get the quality that we wanted.
But if you do it online through those online resources, you don't get the good quality. So it's always been a blah, blah, blah. But anyway, we figured out our
So we decided to go local on this. I mean, we met somebody at dinner with friends who does merch locally for our high school.
She does it for all the PTOs for our local school
district. So think about the way that if you have kids in school, that this is done. It's done as a campaign. So we now have a merchandise shop open, and it's only going to be open for 2 weeks. So you have to go in and place your orders, and then they figure out everything they need, and they actually make the stuff, and they ship it out to you. So you only have 2 weeks to go in and get hats, really nice hats, trucker's caps, baseball caps, t-shirts, hoodies, keychains, magnets, stickers. There's all kinds of stuff.
Personalized flags, which supposedly everybody said they wanted. We've been asked for these for ages. So now we have personalized flags.
And I got to say something here. We have had so many people ask us for RVFTA flags. If you guys don't actually go buy some of these,
this is the last chance.
I'm going to say this for the first time ever in the history of this podcast. I'm going to be upset with you people out there.
We did it because you asked.
I never would have thought of a flag, but you can let everybody know at the campground, hey, I listen to the RVFTA podcasts. I'm part of the RVFTA Facebook group. It's going to be the best conversation starter at the campground.
All right. So the shop, it's not on our website, okay? You have to go to the shop. You can find the link in these show notes. We'll also be sharing all across social media on our Instagram. It'll be our link in bio. It'll be our Facebook link for the next few weeks. So you can find the link, okay, in the show notes for this episode. From April 20th through May 6th, it's going to be open. Then it's going to close, and then everything ships within 2 to 3 weeks of the shop closing. All right.
And can I say that this is like a step more stylish, this gear and this merch, than what a lot of people do through those online stores?
Well, yeah, we handpicked.
This is
the
more
styles,
handpicked, and this stuff looks like the type of caps you'd get in a store.
Oh, the hats are
awesome, and we tried on the hats, we tried on the t-shirts, and we didn't want junky quality. We really did, and we got good quality stuff here, and we think you're really going to love it. So go buy some RVFTA merch to rock at the campground this summer.
All right. Now, also come say hey to us at the Hamburg, Pennsylvania Cabela's this Saturday. If you're listening to the podcast right when it comes out, Saturday, April 21st, we're going to have Penny the pop-up camper there and all of the Cabela's gear that we use when we go out to the campground.
And we're going
to
be setting up the pop-up camper right outside the store.
Yep.
So when you walk in, there'll probably be like the Cast Iron Cooks and some of the other groups that come, because it's a big celebration of Pennsylvania camping this weekend. And we'll be there with Penny set up and all of our Cabela's gear that we've been testing over the years. We would love to say hello to you. I'm really excited for this.
Yep. All right, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning in.
Oh, we should tell people when we'll be there. If you're by, I would say by 11 a.m. we'll be there.
Fingers crossed.
Be set up. Okay. Probably earlier, but just, you know.
What did my grandmother say? Lord willing and the creek don't rise.
Let's say 11 to 3, you're guaranteed to see RVFTA and Penny all set up outside the camp. And Stephanie's been working hard on redecorating Penny, too. So you can see, like, the current status of Penny, the
$1,000
pop-up camper.
100%
She's
going to
look beautiful.
She'll have her, you know, she'll have some makeup on. All right, everybody. We'll see you at the campground.
We'll see you at Cabela's.